This is Martine Perry. I'm here talking with Pamela Davis. We're going to talk today about Pamela's album, Marlena Rides Again, which I guess is a tribute album to Marlena Dietrich, would you say?
Yeah, it's definitely a tribute album to the famous actress Marlena Dietrich, the one that sang Falling in Love Again.
So my first question would be, why Marlena Dietrich? Why cover these songs? You're someone who has more of a folk rock background. So what drew you to this type of music?
Well, you know, this was my 14th album, and I like to change things up per album. I discovered Marlena Dietrich from her movie Blue Angel from 1930, and that movie just blew me away. I mean, the acting, the intensity of it, the storyline. And it's like, never saw a movie from back when that had such a strong emotional delivery the way that movie did. And of course, when she's up on stage singing, Falling in Love Again, you know, it's like, wow, with the top hat. I mean, it was quite the moment for me.
Falling in love again, never wanted to. What am I to do? I can't help it. Love's always been my game. Play it as I may. I was born that way. I can't help it.
Presence. There's no question about it. I mean, if anyone's watched her, any of her early films, and even throughout the rest of her career, she was someone who had a stage persona. So let's talk a little bit about stage persona, because that's interesting. It's different from, you can be a technically great singer, but if you don't have that persona, there's something missing, isn't there?
Well, you know, after World War II, she reinvented herself and started doing a live show. And she brought that intensity that she had in the movies. You know, that theatrical background. She had Burt Bacharach, who arranged the music, who was brilliant for her. I mean, people would go to see her, not because she was the greatest singer, but the intensity, the performance, the delivery.
Exactly.
Was just intense. So you go back to those early movies, and you had von Sternberg, who discovered her in Germany and then brought her over to America.
Morocco, I think, was the other
Morocco was,
big film.
Yeah,
and that's the film that she's more, her iconic persona comes into vision, because that's the one where she's wearing the
tuxedo.
The tuxedo and tails, and it's very, it's like flirting with bisexuality. And, you know, that's the image I think a lot of people have in their head when they think of her.
And she later utilized that on stage too. She'd come out, you know, in a very beautiful gown, and then she would appear in the tux. Yeah, it was a cool little scene, and kissing the woman there, and it was a major scene in the movies because it had never been done. And of course, it's before the
pre-code, so it's before, exactly.
You know, but it was the sheer performance that she did, and every movie she had a different look, and they'd give her a song to sing. And Frederick Hollander wrote Falling in Love Again. His grandparents started the Berlin Conservatory, and he went on to write pretty much all her movie songs.
Let's talk a little bit about her singing style, because it is a style. It's her own. And how did you think about approaching how you were going to cover these songs on this album? Because I'm sure that that was a little bit intimidating, or it would have to be, for someone to, okay, I'm going to tackle these songs in the way she did them, but again, make them my own as well.
I didn't find it intimidating. I found it interesting. So I analyzed her singing style, her phrasing, her diction, her uniqueness with her approach to singing. But on the other side of the coin, she was not operatically trained.
Right.
And so I wanted to, you know, push it a little bit further than what she could do.
What in her limited range she could do.
She had this very staccato approach, too. See what the boys in the back room will have. My goal was just to be able to sing in her range, number one. And number two, do what she was doing, but try to do it better than what she was doing. I know that may sound bad. Oh, you should just sing it like her. But I'm not an impersonator. I'm not an imitator.
See what the boys in the back room will have. Tell them I'm having the same. Go see what the boys in the back room will have. Give them the poison they name. And when I die, don't spend my money on flowers and my picture in a frame. Just see what the boys in the back room will have and tell them.
Copy what she did. You want to make it your own in some way.
Yeah. There's a song that she did for the Tom Jones movie in the 60s. I believe it was 1964. If he swings by the string, he will hear the bell ring. And there's a little movement in the song. And I like the way it was done originally on the recording, but it's like, yeah, it's been done. I felt I could do it in my style and rewrote the string arrangement. It's probably about, I think it was about 8 bars. In the middle section, she had like background singers on it. Ooh, doing a beautiful harmony. And I felt, boy, with her speaking pattern, it's like it'd be cool just if she had narrated it. So I did the narration there.
Oh, okay, yeah.
If he swings by the string, you will hear the bell ring.
If he swings by the string, he will hear the bell ring, and then there's an end to poor Tommy. He must hang by the noose, for no hand will cut loose the rope from the neck of poor Tommy.
Autobiography, didn't she?
She did write an autobiography. And whenever anybody writes one on themselves, it's going to be the way they want to be remembered.
Of course.
There was another book written by Stephen Bach on Dietrich, and he covered all the details of her life. And that probably was the best biography on her that I have seen. But also her daughter, Reva, wrote a book, but hers was more sensationalized. And
yeah,
the book deal was done before Dietrich died in 1992. And the idea was it was going to be sensationalized the way that Joan Crawford's
daughter, Christina, wrote Mommy Dearest.
Yeah, Mommy Dearest.
It was along those lines.
Yes,
right?
It was in that era. So, you know, you have to take that for a grain of salt of what's really real. So I didn't need the books. I had the movies to watch. And so you're watching the movies, learning how the great Dietrich presented herself on film, and the books filled in the backdrop. And that was my guideline to this project, Marlena Rides
right.
Again.
So what songs did you know of hers? Like, when you started this project, were there songs you clearly knew? And then what were some songs that you discovered along the way?
Of course, had played Falling in Love Again and Lily Mullane. I had actually recorded that for a charity album where I just did piano and vocal, did a very simple version, and I really liked that song. That was kind of cool.
Outside the barracks, by the corner light, I'll always stand and wait for you at night. We will create a world for two. I'll wait for you the whole night through, for you, Lele Marlene, for you, Lele Marlene. Bugler tonight, don't play the call to arms. I want another evening with her charms. Then we will say goodbye and part. Keep you in my heart with me, Lele Marlene. With me, Lele Marlene.
So, you know, some of the songs that I knew before, Laziest Gal in Town, Wooden Heart, and Hot Voodoo, those were songs that I really wanted to do, and Boys in the Back Room. But some of the others, you know, you listen to something, but it's something else to be able to say, hey, you know what? I think I'll record these. There was a sheet music book for Frederick Hollander tunes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But there was not a book for most of these songs. And the chord changes are more jazz. What did I want to do? Hot Voodoo and The Boys in the Back Room were definitely two songs I wanted to do. And then there was a song, You Got That Look, which I felt was just beautifully done.
You got that look that leaves me weak. You with your eyes across the table technique. You've got that look between the lines. You with your let's get more than friendly designs. I should be brave and say, let's have no more of it. But oh, what's the use when you know I love it?
Symphony. Symphony. I keep singing these songs for some reason on this podcast.
No, it's great.
That was a beautiful song, and I was thinking of doing it. And then I started looking on the internet, and I discovered that this song was written by a French composer, the instrumental music. And he was Jewish, and he was rounded up by the Nazis and disappeared.
Wow.
So his friend that he played it to felt so strongly about the tune and about remembering his friend that after the war, he put words to it. That was such a strong message to me. So the words were in French. And I'm like, okay, but this is the English speaking. But then I found, and this is interesting, it was a number one hit in America, I believe in like late 40s. I'm not going to say the date.
Was it really?
Huge hit.
Huh.
Number one hit. The composer over here, or the band leader, put English lyrics to it. And so I used his lyrics. But then there's one section of the song where I do sing in French.
Symphony.
Malena recorded it later after the war, and it was the B-side to Lillee Malene single. So think about that for a second. Lillee Malene is a World War II song, which actually has its roots in World War I, written, and there's a history on that song as well, which is pretty interesting. But when the Germans would take over a town in Europe, they would take over the radio station, and then they would do propaganda radio shows. And they would carry the big shellac records, which were about an inch thick. Some idiot dropped the suitcase, and Lillee Malene was in the middle. It survived. So
oh,
that song
funny.
Was played all the time.
How funny.
Both sides started really liking it. The Allied forces and the Germans became very, very popular. And so after the war, Malena recorded it.
That's an interesting story, and it makes sense because, I mean, I don't know a lot about her, but I do know, you know, she was someone who was, if we're going to talk about World War II a little bit and her mm-hmm. contribution to the war, to the Allies, to the Americans, you know, this was a German woman living in America. She was 100% anti-Nazi. They tried to recruit her to come back to Berlin. They were going to pay her a lot of money to, you know, sing for the war effort. She absolutely refused. And then she's on, you know, Allied radio singing to the troops. I mean, that's really says something about her character.
Hitler had it out, a reward for her capture. So had she been captured, they would have shaved her head, beaten her, and just tied her up to a pole.
Yeah.
So she was always around the generals, General Eisenhower, General MacArthur, and all those people to protect her from all that. Well, but she was fearless.
Let's be clear. I mean, when we talk about she's singing for the troops, she's not just singing in theater. She's out, like, on the front lines, you know, on rickety stages, performing for those boys. I mean, really, you know, that's very courageous. I mean, something she didn't have to do.
After World War I, her father was killed during the war. Then her mother remarried, and then her stepfather got killed.
Yeah, right.
Berlin was like the place to be.
Well, especially in the 1920s, if we're talking about Berlin, you know, and the sort of avant-garde theater movement. And, you know, you had a lot of a huge arts community happening in Berlin. I mean, everybody wanted to be in Berlin at that time.
Yeah.
And then you have this regime change that comes in and changes everything.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
Very slowly.
Yeah.
But a lot of people just didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. So that's where she was coming from. And she brought that finesse to America. But I didn't think the Americans really got her, whereas the European community did. That's probably why she's still remembered to this day in European countries.
Right.
Germans hated her.
Yeah, I know. My next question was going to be, I think there's like footage of her going back to Germany later. And like there were certain people that liked her. And then she got a lot of people that hated her, you know?
She was touring all the time. She went back to Germany for a concert. And some people were cheering her. And a lot of people were booing her. It got heated one moment when a woman walked up to her and spit on her.
Wow.
And she just kind of wiped it off real quickly and didn't lose a beat and kept going.
Right.
And she did the performances, and, you know, up front they were protesting, but inside the people that wanted to see her were cheering her on. She was a hero.
Yeah, I think her mother die during the war and she had to go back or something?
No.
She
was right there when the Allied forces finally broke through into Germany.
Oh, okay.
She went looking in Berlin for her mother, found her. Her mother had been starving to death.
Oh, gosh.
And, you know, was pretty unhealthy from it. She actually passed away a few months after that.
Oh, okay.
The war had taken such a toll on her. But she had a younger sister. And her younger sister and her husband ran a movie theater at the concentration camps, in the town of one of the concentration camps. That's how they survived.
Wow.
And when Malena found that out, she disowned her, to the point where if there was a picture of her and her sister at a young age,
she didn't acknowledge it.
Well, she cut it up.
Oh.
And so if it was in a book, the picture was cut up.
Yeah.
And so forth. That's how severe it was. She never talked to her again either.
Another spring, another love, and yet it's always the same. Another spring, another love, but love has only one name. Another face, another smile, another ride back to the moon. Another heart that asks for mine, but in my heart the same old tune. The past, a photograph, a letter, a golden dream that could last. And so another
after the war, she kind of segues into getting back to doing the cabaret kind of shows and things like that.
Well, she
in
never
the 50s.
Yeah, she never really did cabaret. She was she trained as a violinist and then broke her wrist.
Mm-hmm.
That ended that. And, you know, in the movies, she'd always sing the song. She'd have one or two songs.
Right.
So in the 1950s, she was offered a gig in Las Vegas, and she went, and she only had to sing for maybe 20 minutes, and she liked it. So from there, she got Burt Bacharach to arrange the music. And that's when it really started to happen. And, you know, she was like the largest grossing star on tour.
Wow.
Here's a little factoid. Marlene Dietrich and the Beatles were on the same bill. They played the Palladium at the end of 1963. Marlene was the big star.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's, you know.
The Beatles were up and coming.
They were up and comers, and she was a headliner, so that makes sense.
Yeah. So, you know, and she actually said she really liked the Beatles, which she didn't like rock and roll. And that's the interesting thing. So you have a song like Near You on this, and it's a very 1950s type of Elvis-y kind of rock tune.
Right.
There's just one place for me, near you. It's like heaven to be near you. Times when we're apart, I can't face my heart. Say you'll never stray, more than just two lips away. If my hours could be spent near you, I'd be more than content near you. Make my life worthwhile by telling me that I'll spend the rest of my days near you.
That was really enjoyable to do, but she didn't like rock and roll. And so in Las Vegas, she did a song, I Hate Rock and Roll, you know, and it's like, oh, I hate when it rocks and I hate when it rolls. And it's like, okay, we get it.
You don't like it.
Yeah.
It's fine.
So,
no, I mean, she was savvy that way. So, you know.
Yeah, to a point. And Near You was one of those tunes, like I said, where she did it. It's a cool little tune.
So were there any challenges with any of these songs that you had when you were recording?
I think one of the interesting things was the flute part on Look Me Over Closely. I had Marty Gilman come in, whose expertise is playing flutes and clarinets and sax and a whole bunch of different instruments. And Marty's on half the tunes. So Look Me Over Closely had a flute part where it moved very quickly, but it took a little bit for him to do it.
Look me over closely, tell me what you see. The lady likes to look her best before she pours the tea. You'll see a
one song that he was on, Boys in the Back Room, he did a clarinet and he said to me, I'm going to do that in a New Orleans style. Is that okay? I'm like, well, let's see what you do.
Yeah.
So he would come in, the backing tracks were done. And on that one, I had done a demo vocal track, drums, bass, and a piano part. And he came in with that and I just went, whoa, okay, that's interesting, in a different direction. So I added a bass guitar part that I felt would embellish his clarinet part. I played a banjo. I felt that would really add to it. And a guitar part that would all embellish his clarinet.
And when I die, tell them I cry, and tell them And when I die, don't pay the breach.
That was really special. Marty added quite a bit to that song. On Hot Voodoo, he really wanted to play the clarinet part. And as you know, I don't play wind instruments. I'm a string person and a vocalist. But I do play guitar synthesizer and so on.
No, I know.
The guitar synthesizer, you can get vibrato, you can bend the notes, the way a clarinet would be. I did the arrangements differently. If you compare the original and mine, the structure of the song is the same. She had a long intro, the actual music and arrangement is different, though. I also played the muted trumpets on keyboards.
Mm-hmm.
But the clarinet, if you listen to it, it's me on a guitar synth.
Right.
Which sounds just like a real clarinet. No one's going to be able to tell the difference. And, you know, what a fun song that was. And the lyrics on that song, boy, they were so cool. I got to tell you, I had a blast singing that one.
Oh, that's interesting. What is your hope for this album?
The hope for the album is this. I personally loved the music that she had done. And I realized for most people listening to her version, it's dated.
Mm.
You know, I wanted to give it a fresh approach and bring it into the century. I wanted people to be able to hear this magnificent song. So, for example, you know, I had talked about If He Swings by the String and the little interlude section I rearranged. My goal was to modernize it.
Mm-hmm.
Another Spring, Another Love was another song that I wanted to make modern. Beautiful, beautiful song that she had sung. I wanted to change it with acoustic guitars, strumming to make it sound fresh and new so it would hit a bigger audience, but also leaving in enough of the Dietrich element that the hardcore fans, me included, could enjoy. Kind of an interesting balance to work like that. Some of the songs, like Illusions, had that wonderful lush string arrangements, and I left it in somewhat, but again modernized it, and hopefully would realize, hey, this is a cool song, you know?
To buy some illusions lightly used second hand. They were lovely illusions reaching high, built on sand. They had a touch of paradise, a spell you can't explain. This crazy paradise, you are in love with pain.
Some of the songs, it's interesting too, because some of the songs, after doing like a really tough tune like You Got That Look, well, I wanted to do an easier song. So a song like I May Never Go Home Anymore gets a lot of airplay, but is a simple arrangement, and I needed a break, well, I'll do that. Fun song.
I've got kisses and kisses galore that have never been tasted before. If you treat me right, this may be the night. I may never go home.
I may never go home.
I may never go home anymore. I may never go home anymore. Dim the lights and start locking the door. Give your arms to me. Give your charms to me. After all.
You know, there were other songs that did not make the album.
No, I know.
Trying to get the listener in today's world to hear these marvelous songs, well, that's the big challenge here.
No, I mean, that's true. And hopefully it'll pique their interest into her and her singing, you know, and her life's work, as you will.
Right.
Because I feel like she's someone that is probably not as well known as she was, you know, when I was younger, you know. I don't think this generation knows a lot about her.
Yeah, I think that she has definitely faded, particularly in this country, unfortunately. And I think that one can experience her music once again through these songs I re-recorded.
Right.
What is interesting with my version of Till There Was You, she only did it live and never recorded it in a studio. But it is on the live album and YouTube. And of course, we all know the song from...
Musical, The Music Man.
And the Beatles' second album, right?
I mean, it's a song a lot of artists have covered, you know, around that time.
Marty and I were working on an arrangement for it, and he was doing more of the American Songbook style. I didn't want to go quite all the way in that direction, because she didn't quite do the song that way. She crooned it.
Oh, for sure.
But I do hear vaudevillian and, of course, her European influences. So my conversation with Marty, I told him I couldn't get into it this way. Maybe it was an imaginary conversation. I think it was that. And then I started to arrange it differently. He played the piano because it's one of the songs he always performed. And he did the horn part. And I changed the chords on it. But don't tell him that.
There were bells on a hill, but I never...
Another song that was interesting was Wooden Heart, which is an old German Navy song from the 1800s. Du sie dann, du sie dann, und straight laden Haus, straight laden Haus, und dann meines Wats weiz wir. I forgot some of the German words on that.
Du sie dann, du sie dann, und
So, I May Never Go Home Again. That was like a drinking German song. I never did anything like that in my life. I may never go home anymore. And so I wanted to do that as a result.
Right,
and,
yeah.
And that's a fun song to do. And picturing in my mind, of course, everybody drinking their beer, raising their glasses above their head, and singing along as loud as they can.
I've got kisses and kisses galore.
One song that I did was Illusions. That's from the movie A Foreign Affair, where it's just after World War II. Another wonderful song written by Frederick Hollander, who wrote, again, most of her songs. After the war was over, and the big song was Black Market. Black Market, sneak around the corner. Black Market. And I wanted to do that song. That was a Frederick Hollander song, as Illusions is. But I started listening to Illusions, and I just fell in love with that song.
Yeah.
And said, yeah, that's the song. I mean, if I ever did a volume two, Black Market would be first one I do.
Okay, yeah.
Get Away, Young Man was another type of tune I would never have done from one of the Western movies she did. Get away, get away, get away, young man, get away.
I want to thank you for talking to me today about your album, Marlena Rides Again. I think it's a really important album, and I hope people take a listen and discover Marlena Dietrich if they hadn't heard her before. I think she's someone who really is important in American history. I think she's an important artist.
Yeah. Thank you, Monty.
Thank you, Pamela.
Did you ever happen to hear a voodoo? Give a damn what you do. Tom-toms put me under a sort of voodoo, and the whole night long I don't know what's right from wrong. Hot voodoo, black as mud. Hot voodoo in my blood. That African temple has made me a slave. Wants to take a vacation. Got voodoo, head to toe. Hot voodoo, burn my clothes. I want to start dancing, just wearing a smile. Hot voodoo, I'm aflame. I'm really not to blame. That African temple is meaner than me. Brave, I want to misbehave. I'm beginning to feel like an African queen. Those drums bring up the heaven inside me. I need some great big angel to guide me. Hot voodoo gets me wild. Oh, farman, save this child. I'm going a-blazing.